talking with the citizen lobbyist on a great, great morning here, Thursday, March 9th, and the wind is blowing, and you're not where the wind is, I'm guessing.
Well, I wanted to make sure that I was safe and I wouldn't blow past the studio. It's really howling out there.
Yes, we've reported this morning, Thursday morning, 53-mile-per-hour gust at the Palmer Municipal Airport. So lots of stuff happening. Probably made a wise choice, and your voice is coming in loud and clear. So let's talk about things that happened Tuesday and have continued to happen through the week.
Well, Tuesday was the full meal deal at the assembly for the assembly meeting this week that started at 4 o'clock as a joint meeting with their school board. And it was actually a fairly packed agenda. I always go to those school board joint meetings thinking they need to talk about far more than they ever talk about. And this time they really kind of rolled up their sleeves and talked pretty seriously about a very serious subject, and that's budget and both of their fiscal challenges going into the coming year and beyond.
That's quite true.
Yep. So they had three things on their agenda, Mike. Everybody was there. It should be noted, Mr. Culligan was on the line, although I don't think he spoke through the entire meeting. So he was out of country, apparently, but on the line. And other than Member Sarah Welton from the school board, everybody was there in their chairs and ready at 4 o'clock. So they started off with talking about their annual budget and bonding for school. That was the very first thing. And Superintendent Gene Stone led the conversation, which was, a lengthy one, talking about, of course, the latest thing that had happened that very day was at 2:30 they had gotten word.
Right, that the House bill in the House Finance had essentially been squashed, and that was good news. Suggesting, at least for the moment, school district was not going to have to be concerned about finding additional monies to repay some of that bond debt. Of course, this is not completely off the table, and we'll see how it happens later on. But in addition, there were a lot of details about budget actions, including citizen lobbyists.
The outsourcing isn't off the table, but they're looking to maybe modify their custodial staff, losing about 18 custodians, but just not cleaning as frequently in some areas like libraries, special rooms, and cutting back their workforce there. And they will lose some teachers, hopefully from attrition, but they just don't know, and they're still kind of in that wait and prepare mode that they've gone through, and they feel presented a scrubbed budget, cutting everywhere they can. I think we've reported before, Mike, that the superintendent has already taken a 4% pay cut, and the administration staff has taken a 2% cut, and they're in negotiations with all of their labor unions at this point, teachers, custodians, and other trades, and they are not anticipating, hoping that they can come to a good conclusion there and not and hold the line on any type of salary increases. They still don't know what their health costs will be. It's went up 25% last year. They're looking at it to hopefully not go up more than 6%, but they won't have that information till the end of March. So it was really a good summary of where they're at, and there was a lot of interaction between the school board and the members of the assembly. The school board had asked that the next item that the borough talked about their budget, so there wouldn't be any secrets, kind of transparency, we need the money, and do you have it, sort of asked and answered. So that was pretty much an open discussion. So I think it was really good. It was a good meeting. I think it people got a lot of their differences aired out, a lot of misunderstandings maybe about what portion of the district budget has always sort of been a thorn in my side, because it's been presented as such a huge amount of what property tax is, and it's actually much less than what the way it's been portrayed. And so that's kind of been ironed out. So that was good, Mike. And then they went on to the last thing on their item, which is the school site selection priorities. This is a school site selection committee is formed from a couple of assembly people and a couple of school board members, and they try to look into the future and set aside and determine where they're going to need new schools. And they haven't gotten together for some time because of the fact that they've been busy building schools. But it has been acknowledged that we're not going to be done building schools, and we still need to look into the future. So the new formed committee met for its first one, and they came up with a resolution identifying what they needed. I think we talked about this last meeting, so I won't go into it, Mike, but it was just kind of acknowledgement from both sides of what their priorities are going forward. And it was actually good to see that they had made so much progress in one meeting, because that committee has really struggled in the past. So that was kind of it, Mike. Most of the information that listeners might want to know about or is on the district website. And we don't have the borough budget yet, but we do have a lot of information on the school budget. And they, unfortunately, without knowing what the state, again, and what the borough is going to be able to give them out of their into their budget, we'll have to present one to the borough here in, I think it's April 1st they have to have it. So they're the first in line to have a balanced budget and the last to know if they're going to have any extra money to add anything back in, which is kind of unlikely at this point.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah, it was good. So it was a good feeling meeting. I noticed I was there at the end, and I thought it was just, it was both serious and substantive. You're right.
Yeah, and I should acknowledge that it started off, which is the way they've been starting these meetings off, which I think is really good, by the first grade or the kindergarten, I can't remember which, of the Cottonwood School came in and sang, you know, a little song for them, and it was adorable, of course. So I think that's a great way to start these meetings. It sort of puts everybody kind of at ease and lets everybody breathe. So that was really good.
Right.
So then the important, or not the important, equally as important, but the long meeting, I thought.
I would agree.
The next, Mike, was the actual borough meeting. That was a long one.
Yes.
Lots of things on, but boy, oh boy, was it a long meeting.
Yes.
Started at 6 o'clock, everybody there again. Again, Mr. Culligan was not there, but on the line. They had a lot of committee reports. They had one started off by some news about the fish board that didn't go so well for them this year. It could have been worse, it sounded like, but turned out to be could be of some concern going down the road as the commercial and the sports fishermen try to work out, trying to figure out how that resource is divvied out. So that was a little bit of a report on that. It's followed by a report from the Mat-Su Convention and Visitors Bureau, what they're up to, and then the normal reports from the cities, both Nate Wallace from the City of Palmer and Mayor Cottle were there, so that was a good to hear from both of them what's going on in their cities. And then they had a report was interesting on their health care. They had their the borough, of course, is a self-insured health care, the way they handle their health management, and they had their insurer come in and talk about the structure of their plan, how they've saved money, what they're looking to save money in the future. But, you know, no big surprises there other than the fact that it's really expensive, which we knew before they reported and after they reported.
So maybe
their best to keep those back down,
and maybe just a moment here to think about what you said that they are self-insured. For many listeners might not be clear what does that mean when you're self-insured as a plan.
Well, go ahead, Mike.
Well, I wanted to throw in a little bit to say that with all of the discussion about the Affordable Care Act and health insurance and so on, you have to understand that there are different ways in which you can be part of a health insurance. program. If you're an individual, you may be able to buy one. Very often, though, what we and many listeners may be familiar with is having insurance, we say, through your employer. And that means that you're going to be able to, there's very often a negotiated benefit package, which includes insurance. Very often, it involves payment from both the individual and the employer to combine. And there are a variety of sometimes choices in terms of what level of insurance you'd like to have. Mm-hmm. But when we say self-insured, it means that you're not working with a large insurance or a larger pool. Typically, you have a smaller pool of people who basically contribute funds into the monies that would be available to pay for money that has to be going out for any procedures you're going to do or use of that insurance. So it has a little bit of a different flavor, I think, when we talk about self-insurance, because it's incumbent upon the members of that self-insured pool to be careful, because they use the pool, and if they use it efficiently when they need it, but not extravagantly, whatever that might mean, they can mm-hmm. help to keep costs down, even though that's only one factor that helps keep it down. So
just to add on to that, they have an actual health committee within the borough that makes those advisory opinions
right.
for their employees, and about 70% of their allotment, or what the borough holds for medical costs, is actually through medical costs. It's not broken down, you know, by appointments and hospitals and that sort of thing. But there's a you know, a smaller amount for dental, a smaller amount for vision, and that sort of thing. But and they're self-insured to a point, but they also have a policy beyond that if
yes.
something gets to be really, really expensive. But it is a way. They have a little over between three, I think there's about 350 employees
right.
at the district. It's different than the school district, as the borough is about 350 employees. The district has some 2,400 employees, and they're insured through a health trust, an education health trust, a much different deal.
Right, and at some point
so
we'll
this
talk.
It's more like personal
yeah.
insurance almost yeah. with the borough than.
Yeah, and that's there was mention of preferred providers of negotiating ways in which those 350 people can use certain resources and get a better deal, et cetera. And at some point we'll get into the much bigger picture, because the real question is, and that's what's being talked about in Washington D.C. at the present time, is if you get a bigger pools of people, typically. You share the risk, so that if you have a few individuals who need the use of insurance, and then if you're in a small pool, obviously it's going to impact the fellow members of that pool pretty dramatically, and the larger pool somewhat less. And that's been long the discussion. Do you want to have local control, but you also want to share the risk?
Right. Yeah. There's. You're going to hear a lot about health. That's for sure. So, and how that shakes out, how our national health plan also shakes out on, you know, what dictates the costs and the coverage in our locals. It all kind of flows downhill too. So, all pretty interesting stuff. Let's see. They went on from there, Mike. They had a quick little update on their ambulance billing dilemma. They've been trying to catch up their receipts for their billing and transferring over to an electronic system. Sounds like they're about up to October now.
Right.
But they hope to be, Assistant Manager George Hayes is in charge of this project, and it sounds like he hopes within the next 6 months that they'll be right on schedule, which will help a lot when you don't have all those ambulance receivables. I know Assemblyman Jim Sykes made the point that one ambulance ride is about $1,300. So if you think of every time the ambulance goes out that they haven't collected from, that's quite a list of receivables, I would think.
Right.
They had on their agenda, Mike, a report from the Point McKenzie rail extension, but they punted that down the road for a couple of months. So it sounds like after budget they want to talk about that, or the manager does.
That's right.
And then they had a small presentation from the people from NSTAR about April being Safe Digging Month, and how what a big deal that is if someone actually hits one of their gas lines.
Oh.
It could be catastrophic, and a warning for the borough to be proactive in educating people, and that they would join that effort. And I hope they take them up on that.
That was very persuasive to point out that, we live with gas all around, and generally people are careful and there's no problem. But if a problem does happen, it is a big deal.
So then they had a little report from the attorney, Mike, and he referred to something I forgot to mention about the joint school board meeting, and that was the idea that they have been in talks with to put a sales tax in front of the voters to help fill the void in revenues coming to the borough. And their attorney warned them that an area-wide sales tax proposal is not an easy part of law, and that Juneau is still in full session. They're looking at that as well, and to ask for his input, because that's something that has to go on the ballot and it has to be planned for. And so he just gave him that sort of heads up.
Right. Yeah.
Which is caution.
It's complicated. And yes.
Very complicated. And I would think even more complicated since the state has not really decided how they're going to fill the revenue hole. They're still concentrating on cuts, it would seem. So then that kind of was sort of it, and they launched into their great big, took up most of the evening, and that was about trapping.
That's right.
Oh, I don't even know if I've recovered enough to talk about trapping, Mike.
Well, especially if you've read Zas Hollander's article about the reconsideration of what they had decided.
Oh, my gosh. So this trapping ordinance has been kicked down the road a couple of times. It was brought to the table by Assemblyman Mayfield. And right out the chute, they had some amendments that Assemblymember Doty had made, adding some blatant sort of areas that had been ignored in the original resolution or ordinance. And she added in a whole bunch of them, including the Matanuska River Park trails and Alcantara, West Bodenburg, a Butte Trail, and the Crevasse Marine and some other areas. And then they went back and forth. And this is what I describe to people as sausage making at the table.
Oh, yes.
Where everybody's decided, whoa, I have a trail. I want it protected. I need to help. And they don't quite get it together before. So they try to do it at the table, and it got pretty confusing there for a while. And I will say, in all fairness to the assembly, we have an Open Meetings Act, and so what that means from the state is that you can only talk to two other members of the body about your piece of legislation. So it restrains them in places like this. It's not like the assembly can say to their other assembly members, you know, here's something I'm putting forward. I'd like your support. What input do you have for me? Have I covered all the areas that we should do this in? They can only talk to a couple of them. Now, I don't know who Mr. Mayfield talked to, but it does have some restraint. And so that's why you often see amendments coming last minute at the table at that day, because they can't have that conversation ahead of time. So I just want to say that in defense of the assembly, because I think that people sometimes think that people are doing these things. There's a lot of skullduggery involved, and there is oftentimes. I will say that does happen. I've seen it. But in this case, I think it was just a matter of, oh, we can do this on all borough areas, so I have this. And just, it got pretty confusing at that point. But there were, and big shout out to the trail users who showed up. There was probably about 80 people in the room, Mike.
Right.
I estimated 75, 80. I think that's also 75. And about half of them spoke, and they spoke respectfully and informatively, and they made it brief, but very pointedly, that they were very much in support of this area. What struck me, Mike, and I was thinking about this yesterday, is what a change it's been in seeing who comes to the assembly and hearing just more recently these issues bubble up about land conflict. But a lot of people testifying, they moved here because of the quality of life. They moved here to recreate. A lot of younger people whether they're being here because our health industry is really bulging, it is really the only growth area. So that's attracting some of, you know, nurses, doctors, people in that line of work. But it definitely, we're hearing from different people about their different vision than we've been used to of using the and recreating in the borough. And we're also not 10,000 people, we're 100,000 people. So these conflicts are going to arise. But this has been on the burner for about a year and a half. There was plenty of talk at the table and comment. But at the end of the day, they did pass an ordinance. And at 6-1, Mr. Culligan was dead set against it. He just didn't like the whole thing. There were only about four people that really sat up. There were trappers that spoke sort of in favor of it, actually, but just guardedly in favor of it and spoke up for trappers. But so it did pass, but what you're referring to and what Zaza's article, and I encourage people to read it in ADN, refers to is that every assembly person that is in the affirmative on a piece of legislation does have the opportunity to reconsider by 5 o'clock the next day his vote or her vote. And that's what Willow Assemblyman Kowalki has done.
Right.
He's reconsidered his yes vote. His reasonings are pretty clear. He thinks a couple of the things that they actually protected, they don't have the right to protect because it's not their land. We have the borough has a lot of leased land. I haven't looked these areas up, but that was why the government peak wasn't in there, is because it's actually not borough land. It's got a very long 99-year lease, I think, from the state.
Right.
So he wants to reconsider his vote. It sounds like he doesn't necessarily want to get rid of it. It's just that he wants to add a couple of places in Willow that he's now thought about, and make it clear what exactly is in the ordinance. So it's not a horrible thing.
Well, the thought I had while watching this happen is, you're right in describing a sausage making at the table there, throwing whatever you happen to have in. This will be incentive. What was very much missing was the graphic display of what people were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this borough has a wonderful GIS department. They have great mm-hmm. maps. They can, in a very short order, show you where a particular trail is, all the land, who owns it, etc. And that is available. And if you're sitting up there trying to make sense of this, I think in fact for the audience as well, that information should be displayed. And I'm hoping that on March 21st, that's what people will be seeing. But also, I want to go back to Mr. Culligan. I think he had some opposition. There was one aspect of this that I think in retrospect made great sense. One of the things that he did say was that this was moving, these amendments were both convoluted and moving too quickly here. That's what he was slowing down on. Now, he may have had other objections too, but I think in retrospect, as people began talking longer and longer, my impression was it was increasingly difficult to follow what people were saying. And that's a sign where you have to take a time out.
Well, I'll say two things about that. Number one, there was a map, a handout map at the back there with all the documents. It wasn't a very good one, and it only really spoke to the ordinance that was in front of them. It didn't have any
right.
of the other
exactly.
amendments on it. So I think you make a really good point on that, of using the tools that are available to them. And I think it's a fair point about Mr. Culligan. I will say he wasn't there.
Right.
And it's easier to follow when you're there in your chair, and he's
exactly.
not there, and he's been missing a lot of meetings, and it does put anybody that can't be there at a disadvantage. And I've also been witness to sometimes that Mr. Culligan is in the chair, that there's equally amount of fast amendments going on. But if you're on the side that you want it to go through, you're less vocal about it being a messy
sure.
process. But he did make a fair point. And I would encourage everybody to have their information in front of them, and that, that the amendments are clear and concise, and that's always much more helpful in things like this, for sure. I thought it was a little palatable that the attorney was a little nervous about the whole thing. And when the attorney gets nervous, you can tell it's just getting a little crazy there. And but it's hard at that point. You would have to have somebody move to delay, you know, to the next meeting, mm-hmm. and get all the amendments. And that could have been done. No one did that. But you have 80 people in the audience that have are all there expecting something to happen.
Sure.
So there's a little bit of pressure on that side too. So there's,
and of course,
a lot of dynamics.
And of course, there's that other aspect of coming to agreement on the base part of the ordinance, and then mm-hmm. adding other pieces later on, mm-hmm. which can mm-hmm. be done too.
Yeah, but that, you know, it's so much better if they just pass a good, well, clean piece
sure.
of ordinance.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But what they have now, unfortunately, has a lot of strings attached to it.
Yeah, and there's two things. Kewaukee actually reconsidered his vote. What he could have done is let it go through and move to amend it a little further down the line. I think what's giving him pause here, and maybe this is the reason to reconsider, is that I think Zaza's article indicates that the Matanuska Park, and maybe another one, I can't remember, I don't have the article in front of me, is not really theirs to protect. So maybe that's why he wanted to clean it up at this point, is not to have something in the ordinance that actually shouldn't be there, because it's not, they don't have title to it. And it also should be noted, for people interested in this subject, that there is a House bill that Representative Josephson from Anchorage has in. They've had one hearing on it in a judiciary. It's HB 40. And it would cover state land. And that makes it a little bit complicated, too, because you have trails that cross borough land onto state land.
Right.
And so it's a trapping ordinance on state land. So people, I have not followed it closely. I've heard one hearing on it. They mostly heard from trappers, but it might be something that, if people are interested in this subject, to look up on the Alaska Legislature website and find out when the hearings are, and get in contact with the sponsor about it, and see if they want to pursue that for state land.
Okay. Well, we've covered quite a bit of ground as we come to the end here. We have about a minute left. Any last comments?
Nope. I just hope the wind stops, Mike.
Okay. I'm in agreement.
You can about that.
I'm in agreement. Well, thank you, Citizen Lobbyist, for another interesting discussion about the background to what's happening in the Valley. We'll talk to you again next week, and have a good day.
Be safe out there.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.